I'm going to start out today by pointing out a cartoon that was found on the editorial page of the Red Guard, otherwise known as the Red Rag. People around here call it the Register Guard. But it's a man sitting there looking at the TV with his wife. And the TV is telling him, a California federal court banned people from smiling in public after a disgruntled atheist said smiling faces reminded him of church people. Now, the fact is, that's just about how ridiculous it's gotten. And as I'm going to point out, it's all a part of a general thing going on in this country. So the title of my sermon today is The Moral Collapse of America. The moral collapse that's taking place. People are all concerned about their little personal things and their private things and this going on and that going on. There's something far greater and far more sinister than those things in their lives, and that's the moral collapse of this country. Now, I'm going to read some scriptures to you, and then I think we'll see new meaning. We'll see a new relevancy to these when we get more of the facts. Here's what we read in the book of Isaiah. And remember now, these are prophets. Many of the prophecies in these various prophetic books have yet to be fulfilled. It says here, sinful nation, Isaiah began 1, verse 4. People laden with iniquity, a brood of evildoers, children who are corruptors. They have forsaken the Lord, they have provoked to anger the Holy One of Israel, they are turned away backward. So now the question is asked, why should you be stricken again? And here's the answer. You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick and the whole heart faints from the sole to the foot even to the head. There is no soundness in it. But wounds and bruises and putrefying sores that have not been closed or bound up or soothed with ointment. Pretty good description of our country morally today. Now here in Hosea, the fourth chapter, we read this, Hosea 4 and verse number 1. Hear the word of the Lord, you children of Israel, for the Lord brings a charge against the inhabitants of the land. There is no truth or mercy. Now, we have all kinds of people that think they're showing mercy. As I'm going to point out to you, they're motivated all right by various thoughts that they think are right. But it isn't really the kind of mercy God would expect. Or knowledge, there is no truth or mercy or knowledge of God in the land. Very, very little nowadays. The time is going to come, as we well know, where there will be a famine of the word. And to what extent that's now taking place, I do not know. But I can say this, I don't know of a single organization or church on the face of the earth that's preaching all the truth. Isaiah 1, verse 10. Notice this description. Hear the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear to the law of our God, you people of Gomorrah. That's how he describes us. Now, when you see the homosexual agenda developing the way it is, that text has some meaning. Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse number 4. Zephaniah 3 verse number 4. Her prophets are insolent, treacherous people. Her priests have polluted the sanctuary. They have done violence to the law. What is the notion about God's law with the vast, vast majority of people who regard themselves as clergy today? Have they done violence to the law? You bet they have. Isaiah 5, verse number 20. Isaiah 5, verse number 20. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil. Isn't that what's going on today? I remember one of these well-known movie personages that made the remark, "For a woman to be a virgin is evil." Calling evil good and good evil. "Woe to them," God says, "who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight." They think they know. They have all the answers. So this is the kind of thing that we're getting. This country's being inundated with from top to bottom. Malachi chapter 2, verse number 17. "You have wearied the Lord with your words. Yet you say, in what way have we wearied him?" And he says, "But you say, everyone who does evil is good in the sight of the Lord, and he delights in them." Now, isn't that what they say? Isn't that what's going on? Chapter 3, verse number 15. "So now we call the proud blessed," or blessed, "and those who do wickedness are raised up," or they're established. They even tempt God and go free. So this is the state and the condition that we're in. Now, I'm talking about the moral collapse of America. Now, what are the symptoms? Now, I could spend a great deal of time on this, but I'm going to try to cover it rather briefly. And I think most of you are probably aware of these anyway. But first of all is situation ethics. We've all heard of situation ethics, haven't we? Situation ethics is due to the American people rejecting biblical absolutes. The very foundation on which our country is founded has now been cast aside, and these absolutes have been rejected. So now it is a matter of living in an ambivalent morality. Whatever suits the need at the time, whatever fits, whatever seems to be appropriate or, quote, doesn't hurt other people. This is what we're living in today. You remember the clipping I read to you where one-third of these young people who were interviewed said they wouldn't hesitate to cheat to get ahead in life if they could get away with it. Situation ethics. The second thing, of course, is cultural seduction. Oh, boy, this is where television comes in. Cultural seduction. What we're actually witnessing, not only from the television, I don't mean just shows, but I mean from news, news reports, from commentators, from even newspapers, what we're witnessing is the willful blurring of sexual roles. So now we have how many shows on mainstream now showing homosexuality? And who's being targeted? Children. Children are the ones being targeted. Cultural accommodation. The idea that we have to be one, we have to adopt one another's cultures. We have to be open-minded. We have to be very fair. We have to be embracing this concept of a one-world people. The idea that, and what is used to do this is, of course, scriptures are distorted. And we've all heard this thing about these hate laws where you cannot disparage anyone regardless of race, religion, sexual orientation. And the scriptures are now being distorted in order to accommodate probably the number one hot button issue right along with homosexuality, and that's abortion. I'm sure glad to see what the Senate did. I mean, what the Senate did and what the president is going to sign this bill to put a stop to part of it. But you see, little children in their mother's womb are not considered human beings until they're born. So you're not really killing a human being. They reason. You have that. And then, of course, you have this notion of inclusive salvation. All religions are equal, and everyone is good in God's sight. Doesn't matter whether he's a Hindu, whether he's a Taoist, whether he's a Mohammedan, whether he's a Christian, no matter what. We're all equal, and all religions are good. So now what do we have going on? The amalgamation of all these religions is one great big pot of confusion. That's what's going on in this country. And you ask yourself why we have a moral decline. Now, when you understand some of these things, you can see why the scriptures have relevancy. So the next question I want to ask is, what is the dominant influence in bringing this about? What's the dominant influence? Well, there isn't just one. It's several. I'd say, and if I were going to give it one general title, I would say the liberal ideology. The liberal ideology. Now, we've heard of liberals and we've heard of conservatives most of our lives. What are the earmarks of a liberal? A dyed-in-the-wool liberal, and you'll find the universities and colleges saturated with this kind of stuff. First and foremost, their idea of human nature. They reject the Bible revelation that God created in man a fixed nature. And while this nature can be changed through the power of God, it is not plastic and changing, capable of unlimited amelioration. If anything, it is getting worse and worse. And when we have the modern weapons we do, has human nature changed any? So they reject the Bible truth regarding man's nature. And when you do that, you don't even have a basis to begin with proper knowledge and truth. The second thing of the liberal ideology is what truth is. What is truth to them? It is what is believed by the democratic majority and what science teaches. That's truth. The only problem with that is what was truth 100 years ago is no longer truth today. So it's changing, isn't it? Changing all the time. And the idea is you can never ever really know it because it's changing all the time. Now, ask yourself the question, to what degree was the church penetrated by these notions back in the 70s? And then ask yourself the next question, to what degree have these ideas got into my mind, even in a minor way? See, that's what we really need to be looking at. The degree to which we have been influenced by this liberal ideology. And the next thing is this incessant guilt complex. Why do I bring that up? Because if you're a Christian and you believe in God and in Jesus Christ, even though you may not know the truth to a large degree, you know that Jesus Christ paid the price for the penalty of our sins and that we have to accept Him. They don't understand what it means to really accept Him, but they accept Christ and trust in some way that there's relief from their guilt. Now, what if you're a liberal and you don't even believe in God and you're an atheist and you don't think you need God for anything? Is there any way you're going to get rid of your guilt? You know, we read in the book of Romans here just recently that man has this inherent thing within him, either condemning or excusing one another. He has an inherent guilt within him. Now, how is that guilt going to be erased if you don't accept God and Christ? Oh, I'll show you in a few minutes here. And then the next thing, of course, is the universal dialogue. Now, what do I mean by the universal dialogue? Every single problem has to be talked out, doesn't it? But here's the catch. Liberal ideologues refuse to take no for an answer. They're going to talk until they wear you down and they get a compromise out of you the way you want. And that's what negotiations are all about nowadays. How many times do we hear of conferences going on and on, repeated over and over and over again? They will not take no for an answer. Now ask yourself, has that affected you any? You know, there's an interesting text here in Isaiah, the 32nd chapter. Isaiah 32 and verse number 5. And I'm going to read the King James, and I'll read it from the Living Bible, which I think puts it much more clearer. It says here, a foolish person will no longer be called liberal. The foolish person will no more longer be called liberal. This is the New King James. That is a vile person in the King James, but it means somebody who's really stupid and foolish. And nor the miser said to be bountiful. You find out the policies of some of these people that made millions and millions of dollars off of the labor of the people, and then all of a sudden they become well-known, popular, great philanthropists. Yeah. Here's how the Living Bible translates it. In those days, the ungodly, the atheists, will not be heroes. Wealthy cheaters will not be spoken of as generous, outstanding men. This is the world today, isn't it? Didn't I read you a text a minute ago that these evil are exalted and people look up to them as their heroes? Now, what are the agencies that are really affecting this and bringing it about? Well, there are several. Certainly, we could say probably paramount in the whole thing is the media. When I say that, I'm being all-inclusive. I'm including the whole liberal left-wing media, which completely dominates the airwaves except for talk radio. And once in a while, you find a conservative, reasonably conservative television program, but mostly they're very, very bent toward the left. That is, toward this liberal ideology. You get it drummed into your head day and night when you stand up, when you sit down, when you lie down, as soon as you get up, morning and night. Whatever you listen to, this is what you're getting in one way or another. Very clever little subtle ways. Certainly I can say politicians. And I can say lawyers. And I can certainly say judges. I can say educators. And I can say the clergy. Those are all the instrumentalities that are used to bring this about. And it's being peppered into our heads, into your head and mine day and night. It doesn't get peppered into mine because I sit there fuming every time I hear it and switch channels and hear another idiot. That's what goes on. Let's notice something now. Here's some of these scriptures I'm talking about that have meaning now. Isaiah 3 and verse number 12. As for my people, children are their oppressors. So what's happened is this whole area of child rearing. You know, some countries it's against the law even to spank your children. You can't discipline them or do anything with them. You have a lot of parents who are so liberal, so, quote, understanding, they've absolutely rejected the Bible revelation about how to rear children. Then they wonder why they get to be teenagers or out of control. I'll tell you, if you don't bend the tree when it's a little sapling and seedling, you're not going to have any control over it when it gets up there and can begin to do its own will. You better understand that, parents. Also, women, rule over them. Look at this women's liberation movement going on, has been going on in this country for some time. Are you one of these women that you're in constant conflict and you're in competition with a man, with your husband, or with men in general? If you are, you'd better get your nose in the Bible and find out what God says your responsibility is before Him. Are you a woman that rules the roost? You know, it's a sad home where the rooster is silent and the hen crows. And there are plenty of those, I can tell you that for sure. So but here's the point I really want to get to in this text here. Oh, my people, those who lead you cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths. Those who lead you, if you follow them, and if you think the popular thing to do is to go along with the crowd, and this is what most people do today, they want to be popular, they want to fit in, they don't want to look like they're oddballish, or not, with the program. And they're being led astray very, very quickly. Isaiah 9, verse number 16. The leaders of this people cause them to err. Who am I talking about? I'm talking about politicians, I'm talking about judges, I'm talking about educators, I'm talking about clergy, and I'm talking about media people. I'm talking about news anchors. They're all biased toward the left. Oh, they'll sit there on their holy little chairs there, and they'll tell everyone, oh, they're not biased, they're not prejudiced. baloney. They're so bad, it's pathetic. They don't even recognize the difference. I can tell you, this is not a new problem. Because you go back to what we read here in Luke 16, Jesus said the same thing in his day. Notice what he said. Luke 16 here, and verse number 15. He said to them, "You are those who justify yourselves before men." I'll tell you, the most thin-skinned people on the face of this earth are media people. They can dish it out, but you give them a little bit and you see how they whine and cry. It's just pathetic. Yes, as he says here, God knows your hearts, for what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. An abomination. You better remember that. You think something is great and popular in this world, you better be doing some thinking about it, because something may be quite wrong. Hosea 4, verse 12. You know, I have people listen to my sermons, and they listen to my tapes, and maybe they've never heard one before, or they've heard a few. They can't take it. It's too strong for them. They don't like it. You know why? They're not used to it. They've just been soft-pedaled. Wherever they go to their religion, whatever source they have, they've been mollycoddled, and they get pablum sermons. They don't like the truth. What about you? What was Hosea 4, verse number 12? My people ask counsel from their wooden idols, and their staff informs them. But here's the text part I want to get to. For the spirit of harlotry has caused them to stray. Spirit of whoredoms, as it says in the King James. Every false, wacky notion and idea that comes along that's not based on biblical truth. That's what they're following in the nation today. Isaiah 9, verse number 17. Isaiah 9, verse 17. Therefore the Lord will have no joy in their young men. You know, you look at the next generation coming up on the scene and what they're getting in the educational system and in the schools and how they're being brainwashed into this liberal socialistic ideology, and you wonder what the next generation is going to be like. Here's a good answer right here. Everyone is a hypocrite and an evildoer, and every mouth speaks foolishness. That's right. This is what you're getting. And this is what this is the world in which we live. Micah 2 and verse number 1. Micah 2 and verse 1. They covet fields. Now we're talking here, what am I talking about? I'm talking about politicians, lawyers, and judges. I heard the other day, and I wasn't the least bit surprised about it. Some deep pockets lawyer will take some case and he'll win it for the people against a big corporation or somebody like that, and the lawyer ends up getting more money than the person who sued. Yeah. Yeah, you wonder what's wrong with the system we have today. They covet the fields and take them by violence, also houses and seize them. They oppress a man in his house and a man in his inheritance. See what happens to you if you don't pay your property taxes for about 3 years in a row. Will your house be taken? Absolutely. This is a nation we live in. Ezekiel 22, verse number 27. The word of the Lord came to me saying, her princes in the midst of her are like wolves, tearing their prey to shed blood, to destroy people, and to get dishonest gain. You know what the purpose of defense attorneys is? It's to get some lowlife off the hook by obfuscating the jury. Throwing so much stuff up there that the jury gets all confused and they either let him off or they have a mistrial or they have a hung jury. That's what his game, aim, and goal and mission is. If he can't get that, he'll take the next best thing, and that is to get the least amount of sentence he can possibly get. Doesn't care. It makes no difference whether the guy's guilty of sin or not. Look at that O.J. Simpson case. How many more? This is what we got in the judicial system in our land today. And what do we have in the clergy? Her prophets plastered them with untempered mortar, seeing false visions and divining lies for them, saying, thus says the Lord God, when the Lord has not spoken. Or they say, oh, the Bible says this. The Bible says this. When it says no such thing. This is what we have. So who's really responsible for creating this plethora of evil and sin going on in this nation today? These major sources who control and influence public thinking and public thought and public talk. Now let's look at something else here. What are the things that are absolutely anathema to liberals? And I'm talking about cut and dried liberal ideologues who are the ones who are up there with great power calling the shots. Not everyone, but there's far too many of them. What is their major anathemas, the thing they virtually hate and cannot tolerate? First of all, accountability. They cannot tolerate accountability. They don't want to hold either themselves or anybody else responsible for anything that's done. And they'll end up making excuses or blaming someone else, and that's just par for the course. I'll give you a good example. Here's how a liberal would think. Some ruffian in school beats up your child. So, how do they react? They have empathy for the assailant. After all, what made him do it? And maybe it's not his fault. He shouldn't be punished because that'll make him more angry. They wouldn't dare teach their child to self-defense and stand up for themselves, to stand up for their rights and what is the right thing. That's not in their thinking. So what do we really have? When it comes to liberal thinking, we have leniency, Trump's discipline, concern, Trump's consequences, motive, Trump's morality, and one's feelings are absolutely sacrosanct. That's the most important thing of all. You've got to take people's feelings into consideration. Now, when I read this quib here from the newspaper about how disgruntled atheist said smiling faces remind him of church people, what am I talking about? This very thing. We want to be concerned about people's feelings. This is what we have going on in this land today. All kinds of crimes being developed and enforced over people's feelings. You ever seen such nonsense in your life? Where is it coming from? It's coming from liberal politicians, liberal judges, and people who make the laws and enforce them. Not so much the police themselves, but people who enforce them. So there's no right or wrong. There's no good or bad. Behavior is to be understood. That is, bad behavior is to be understood, not judged. Bad parenting and cruel society are the culprits of fault in this whole thing. It's not their fault. And I'll give you a case in point. Here's an employer that has one of his employees that violates the law or does something that's wrong. So what does he end up doing? Blaming the employee rather than himself for his responsibility, not seeing that these things are understood to begin with. You know, this is why people are elected to high-ranking offices, because if they're honest people, they're willing to assume the responsibility if something goes wrong instead of blaming someone else. That's liberal thought. That's what these people do. All behaviors to be understood, not judged. So bad parenting and the society's at fault. How many times have you heard this? If you've gone to a university, you've heard it plenty of times. Also, we have this genome project going on, you know, which is supposed to be looking into the DNA and the makeup, the cellular makeup in detail of all human beings. And lo and behold, what have we discovered through them? Why, bad behavior is a biological illness. got nothing to do with character. We'll get to character next, because that's another thing they cannot tolerate, the concept of character. But let's take some scriptures here and notice now what human nature is really like. And this particular thing is true here of all humans, regardless of whether they're liberal or not. It's just probably more pronounced if they're liberal. But here it is. It's a part of human nature. What happened? Genesis 3, verse 11. He said, that is God, who told you you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, you should not eat? And the man said, she did it. The woman. She's the cause. Yeah, blame somebody else. And the Lord said to the woman, what is this that you have done? She said, that snake. Didn't want to assume any personal responsibility, did they? That's human nature from the very beginning. Go back and look at that example of Saul. Remember what happened there in 1 Samuel 15, verse 15, when he said, oh, I've obeyed the words of the Lord. Samuel said, oh, you have. What's this bleeding of sheep and this lowing of cattle then? And what did Saul say? The people did it. It was the people. He didn't want to assume any personal responsibility. He was king. It was his responsibility to see that wasn't done. Why didn't he give orders, and why didn't he enforce it? So people do these. This whole liberal concept is that we must not assume any personal responsibility. We find somebody else to pack it off on. Isn't that the way human nature works? You bet it does. Notice some proverbs here. Proverbs 17, verse 15. Proverbs 17, verse 15. He who justifies the wicked, somebody does something wrong, oh, that's okay, that's understandable. And he who condemns the just, both of them are alike, an abomination to the Lord. Here's another one, Proverbs 24, 24. He who says to the wicked, you're righteous. Him the people will curse. Nations will abhor him. Proverbs 1, verse 30. There are many, many of these proverbs we could look at. I'm just hitting a few of them here as we go along. Now, Proverbs chapter 1, verse 30. They would have none of my counsel. No, of course not. They don't want to be held accountable. They would have none of my counsel, and they despise my every rebuke. That's it. They don't want to assume any personal fault of their own. It's always somebody else. You remember the TV show back in the 60s, I believe it was, or 70s, The Devil Made Me Do It? That's human reasoning, isn't it? Now, I said a few minutes ago, we have another anathema to a liberal, and that is this concept of character. They despise the concept of character. Why do they despise it? Because character requires accountability. Notice James 4, verse 17. You have three things given in this text here, quite clear. James 4 and verse 17. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. Now, what are we discussing here? We're discussing right and wrong, aren't we? Of course, to do good, but he does it not. So we're also discussing something else, the choice he has to make in order to do the right in opposition to the wrong. So we already have the description of character right here, very plainly. And then, of course, what's the end result? It's sin. So as we have understood quite plainly for a long time, character is the ability to recognize right from wrong and then to always choose the right in opposition to the wrong, but that right and wrong has to be defined by a superior source, not by man and his interpretation of what he thinks right and wrong is. And this is what we have when we have situation ethics today. You're deciding for yourself what's right and wrong. Well, I tell you, any fear of God, you don't do that. And I tell you, well, there isn't anything more scarce on this earth today than fear of God. God has already determined right from wrong. The only question you have is, are you going to make the choice to do the right in opposition to the wrong, and are you going to exercise character? Are you going to be held accountable for the things you do? These people don't want to be. They hate it. Proverbs 10, verse 17. He who keeps instruction. Now, what instruction are we talking about? Read all through this book of Proverbs. It's the instruction that God gives us. He who keeps instruction is in the way of life. But he who refuses correction goes astray. You get to the place in your life where you get to the place where you hate God's instruction, you hate God's correction, there's going to be one inevitable way you will go. And that's the same way the way this world has gone. It's gone astray. Absolutely gone astray. Proverbs 27:2. You know, the easiest thing in the world, of course, is to excuse yourself by blaming someone else and extolling your virtues. What does the Bible say? Let another man praise you, not your own mouth. Somebody has something good to say, don't be saying it about yourself. Let them decide that. Proverbs 12, verse number 1. Whoever loves instruction loves knowledge. You know, what does the Bible say? Seek for wisdom. Wisdom is a principal thing. Therefore, seek wisdom. And with all your wisdom, seek understanding. And then it tells about the importance of knowledge. Now, what kind of knowledge are we talking about? The knowledge that is highly touted in this world is the philosophical great concepts of this world? I hope you don't believe that. But he who hates correction is stupid. That's right. We're all human beings, aren't we? We all make mistakes. Can we take correction? Can we learn by them? Or can we go on just justifying ourselves? That's what these liberals do. They cannot stand the concept of character. They hate it. And the last thing I'm going to emphasize in respect to this sermon today is they have a dislike for anything that represents power. Anything that represents power. Except, of course, if they get into controlling the seats themselves. Then it's all one way. Now, let me say this. This begins with an antagonism toward God. That's where it all begins, right there. You know, if you had the right attitude toward God, you'd have the right attitude toward your parents and toward the home, and vice versa. If you have a right attitude at home toward your parents, you'll have a right one with God. If you don't have either one of those two, you're in trouble. And here's what we read in the Gospels, in Luke 19, verse number 12. A certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return. So he called 10 of his servants, delivered to them 10 minas, and said to them, do business till I come. But his citizens hated him and sent a delegation after him, saying, we will not have this man to reign over us. That's exactly the attitude the world has, doesn't it? It represents power. They cannot tolerate power. They don't want somebody telling them what to do. I've heard people hear my sermons and they say, I'm not going to have somebody telling me what to do. Well, you take God's word or not, that's up to you. I can't make you do anything. But I can tell you, in the final analysis, we're all going to answer to God. We better realize we're flesh and blood human beings. We're very limited on this earth, and we've been put here for a purpose, and we better realize that purpose. Otherwise, it's all over. It's that simple. Ezekiel 13, verse 7. See, here's what we got. Let's look at, can you pick up the news or the newspaper any single day of the week? Pick up any newscast without hearing a tirade against the particular party and president that's in power at the time. You get sick of hearing that all the time? I do. And it works both ways. And what do you think would happen if someone, you know, I have to look at Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, maybe some others that are lesser known, that try to stand up and say a few things for this country about what's wrong with it, and what do you think happens to them? Do they want to hear it? Why, they call him every name under the sun. Walter Cronkite said they were worse than the terrorists. That's what kind of treatment you get. Well, here's an example of it right here. Verse 7, Ezekiel 13, have you not seen a futile vision, and have you not spoken false divination? Yet you say, the Lord says, I have not spoken. That is to say, they will accuse them of everything under the sun, and then the ones that get up and give them what they want to hear, that's the ones they listen to. Can you imagine them having somebody like Pat Robertson or Jerry Falwell come to the White House and give a message to the president and to the Congress? You got up there, would you dare tell them the truth? You'd be lucky if you got out of there without being beaten. That's the condition this country's in today. But they'll listen to the false ones, won't they? Because they don't represent power. They just represent compromise and this universal dialogue where you just talk and finally wear somebody down and get an agreement. Isaiah 30, verse number 9. This is a rebellious people, lying children, children who will not hear the law of the Lord. They won't hear it. Who say to the seers, see not. And to the prophets, do not prophesy unto us right things. Speak unto smooth things. Prophesy deceits. Get out of the way. That's right. This is what they're willing to listen to. Jeremiah 7, verse number 28. They don't want anything that reminds them of authority and power coming from God or anyone who may represent God, and they can barely stand any authority and power of the government. Jeremiah 7, verse number 28. This is a nation that does not obey the voice of the Lord their God, nor receive correction. Truth has perished and has been cut off from their mouth. You can run the gamut of religious channels and religious stations from one end of the dial to the other. Where are you going to find anybody really preaching the truth? You might hear some semblances of the Church of God who have a great deal of it, but they rejected two of the most important issues that came on the scene in the 70s, and all of their splinter groups that came out from them did the same thing. Amos 2, verse 11. I raised up some of your sons as prophets, and some of your young men as Nazarites. Is it not so, O you children of Israel? So the Lord says. But you gave the Nazarites wine to drink, and you commanded the prophets, saying, do not prophesy. Or I like the way the Living Bible has it. You commanded the prophets, shut up. Isn't that what they've done? You bet, because it represents authority and they can't stand it. Amos 5, verse number 10. They hate the one who rebukes in the gate, and they abhor the one who speaketh uprightly, or who speaks uprightly. Now you get up and talk pablum, and you talk in Philadelphia language, and you talk in circles, and you talk and don't say anything specific and pointed, you'll get along all right. But you tell it like it is, and you find out what'll happen. That's exactly what we have going on. In Proverbs 1, verses 30 and 31, Proverbs 1, verse 30, they would have none of my counsel. They despise my every rebuke. Therefore, here's what I want to emphasize. They shall eat the fruit of their own way. Isn't that what they're eating today? You look at the crime. You look at the moral decadence in this nation. You look what's happening with the homosexual agenda. You look at the divorce and remarriage. You look at all the fornication going on. You look at all the venereal disease going on. And then you wonder why? Every time I hear one of these habitual criminals being released from prison, then he goes out and kills somebody else again, I think to myself, what a crime. What an absolute crime against innocent people. Where the Bible will require a habitual criminal would be executed. They just let them out over and over again until their crimes get worse and worse. And I'll tell you how the Bible views it. Whoever lets those people loose are the ones accountable. And in the Old Testament, if you're holding someone and he got away from you, your life went for his life. You think you're going to find that in this world today? Let's not kid ourselves. They shall eat the fruit of their own way and be filled with their own fancies or with their own devices. Now, I'll just have one other two areas to cover here. What is their therapy? That is, what do they do in order to solve the problem? What do liberals do? How do they ease their guilt? Very simple. They embrace politics. So some of the most profound left-wing liberals come from very wealthy, rich families, and they run in dynasties generation after generation, don't they? With the same old tripe, same old things trying to ease their guilt. They become champions for social programs. And as I said earlier, these social programs don't solve anything. They just enslave people to the state and make them welfare recipients for the rest of their lives. And then they get in philanthropic movements of one kind or another, and they're doing these good deeds, and somehow or other, they are essentially doing an exercise in penance, is what it is. It's a way to ease their guilt. But it doesn't really ease it, so they just continue on one after another. That's what their therapy is. But just remember what Jesus said here in Matthew 6, verse number 23. The key is to have the right focus, to be looking at the right thing and to be focused in on it. So as you read here, if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. You don't see the right thing. You're misguided and you're misled, and everything is in a blur. And you have some kind of a good feeling of doing good, but it's blurred and you really don't have any real focus on God's law and how these things should be solved, the whole body will be full of darkness. And if therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? That's what we have. Now let me ask you one or two brief questions here to bring this to a close. What is the liberal mindset? What is their mindset? Well, I can tell you what it is. Excessive narcissism. Love of self. That's why you read in 2 Timothy 3, verse 2, it says there are perilous times on this earth. What's the very first thing it says? Men shall be lovers of their own selves. That's right. You know, if they're lovers of their own selves, they want their way. And they're not going to take anybody else's word for anything, and they're not going to accept anybody else's viewpoint. It's got to be their way or the highway. Excessive self-love. That's what dominates them. And then this one really gets to them. The absolute refusal to face the facts when the facts are given them. Now, why do they not like to face the facts? Because facts will irritate their benevolent feelings of good. They're satisfied in their cocoon, and they've got all the answers solved, and all of a sudden here comes the facts and hits them in the face, and it makes them very, very uncomfortable and irritated. They got their minds made up. They're not going to change. I've seen people try to talk to people I've known who understood the truth and turn their backs on. They think they're going to do them good. I tell them, give it a try. You're wasting your time. These are people who do not want to be confused with the facts. Or maybe I should say straightened up by the facts. Let's notice here something that'll straighten them up sooner or later, but it's going to be take a lot of doing to do it. Amos chapter 4. Let's give you a sample here of what I'm talking about. Amos 4, verse number 6. I gave you cleanness of teeth in all your cities and lack of bread in all your places. That's a fact, isn't it? Coming on the scene. That's a reality. That's a fact. But you have not returned to me. I have also withheld rain from you when there was still 3 months to the harvest. I made it rain on one city. I withheld rain from another city. One part was rained upon, and where it did not rain, the part withered. So two or three cities wandered to another city to drink water, but they were not satisfied. That's a fact. But you have not returned to me. They can't get it through their heads, can they? Reality doesn't mean anything. I blasted you with blight and mildew when your gardens increased, your vineyards, your fig trees, and your olive trees. The locusts devoured them. That's a fact. Yet you have not returned to me. I sent among you a plague after the manner of Egypt. Your young men I killed with the sword, along with your captive horses. I made the stench in your camps come up in my nostrils. That's a fact. But you haven't returned to me. So you can see, this is a thing you need to ask yourself. If there's anything I want you to get out of this, you need to realize the degree by which we have all been saturated and inundated with this whole liberal ideology for years. And to what degree have we let it affect us? And don't think it hasn't in some way or another.